When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Very happy to welcome to the podcast the team behind Treasured Films and also Film Treasures, which we'll probably also talk about too. So I've got with me Graham Lloyd and Tom Lee Rutter, and it's great to have you both here. Thank you very much for making the time to do this.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
So you've both got interesting backgrounds. I think perhaps we could quickly start with that. Graham, I understand you've been working in the film business in one way or another. Tell us a little bit about what you've done in the past and how that led to you creating Treasured Films.
Sure. Well, I've been running the retail side of the thing, which is Film Treasures, since July 2021. And that really arose out of, well, being a collector myself and having to import certain titles and just getting fed up with, you know, some suppliers were either charging ridiculous high prices or the times to get here were too long, or the risk of damages was too great. And on top of that, you had all the issues potentially with customs adding another charge on. So I just thought, well, my family joke that really I've just started the business just to build up my own collection and make it worthwhile. But there was something I felt that we could do in terms of a gap in the market and to provide a service. And generally that seems to have gone quite well. We're always looking to grow even further. We'd love to stock UK cult labels like Radiance and Indicator, but unfortunately, you know, if the prices you buy one buys from the distributor, one can't compete with the likes of Amazon, so we've tried and tried. We'd love to stop them, but we couldn't do that, so we focus mainly on imports, mainly from the States, Australia, German media books, that sort of thing. And that's on the films and also the vinyl soundtracks. That's slowly growing. But anyway, yeah, so, you know, that led on to Treasured Films. Again, really, it was something that, as a collector, I thought, well, what do I want to see on the release? And, you know, we've all got different tastes and we've all got different opinions on who we like as critics and who does the best artwork, etc., etc. So really, it was just something that was born out of that, you know, thinking, well, I'd like to take a film and I'd like this kind of packaging and I'd like to learn this about it and so on and so forth. And that's how we started with our first title, The Last Hunter.
Excellent. Yes, I really want to dig into that. But Tom, can you tell us a bit about yourself? You're a filmmaker of some renown.
Well, make films off my own back. They're very very rough around the edges, but hopefully the love you can see on screen. Hopefully you can see that a lot of love gone into it. And I was just doing my thing, really, just trying to get a name for myself around in the festivals, some of the film festivals in the country. And then Graham sort of got in touch with me on Facebook and liked what I was doing. And he watched a film I made called Bella and the Witch Elm, which you've seen yourself. Mm-hmm. And we just got chatting after that, didn't we, really? And it reached a point where Graham invited me down to, the unit that he'd got going for Film Treasures. And then when he sent me the address, I realised it was in Cradley Heath, which is amazing because this is where my grandparents are. You know, this is my stomping ground, right in the heart of the Black Country, So we're both of Black Country origin, which was quite amazing as well, much like yourself, I believe. Is that the right, Adrian?
Yeah, Wolverhampton, born and bred.
There we go. We're in good company here. And I visited, went to Cradley Heath and then visited Graham and his unit, and then I saw the stock that he had, and which blew my mind because, like the rest of us here, I'm an avid collector of weird and wonderful films. And the more we chatted, really, the more Graham saw fit to hire me, really, to kind of jump aboard the treasure chest,
Yeah, it's very exciting, isn't it? Obviously, as it's such a new venture, and you've really hit the ground running with your first release, this lovely box of The Last Hunter.
It's your ass.
Now, of all the cult films in all the world, what led you to this?
Well, I was looking and thinking, what could we release? And I sort of found out a list of available titles. And I wonder why has nobody released The Last Hunter? It's a Margheriti film, David Warbeck. It's a great film. And I don't know why they hadn't. And I just got talking to the Italian rights owners, and they said, "Well, yeah, you can have this, and it's X amount, and if you want it restored from the original camera negative, it'll be this amount." And I sort of ummed and ahed. I thought, "Well, that's a lot of money, but it's a great title, and if you're going to do it, then you may as well do it right." We went for that and got it restored in 2K from the original camera negative, scanned and restored, and it looks mint.
Yeah, it really does.
Thank you. And obviously asked David McKenzie from Fidelity in Motion to master it, and he's done a stellar job on that.
I think the fact that it's a section... It was on the Section 3 list, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that kind of adds a more appeal to the UK market as well, more interest.
Mm. Yes. I don't know whether what the Americans make of all this, but it's a Section 3 video nasty. It seems ridiculous in today's perspective, but we did that, and I don't know, rightly or wrongly, I sort of came to the conclusion this was probably the only David Warbeck film that I was ever going to release. So I wanted to do a bit of tribute to him. You know, we've got talking to Eugenio Ecoloni, who does a lot of extras and great stuff for all the labels, as you know. And he put me in contact with Troy Howarth and Nathaniel Thompson, who very kindly agreed to do the commentary, write a couple of essays, including a nice one on David Warbeck and his Italian filmography, which was very thorough and I'm very pleased with. But also Eugenio came up with the idea that there was a documentary, The Outsider, the cinema of Antonio Margheriti. Antonio Margheriti, I'm always thinking about that film. and that, again, that wasn't cheap, but it's a good documentary. And I thought, well, come on then, you know, let's do it. But yeah, so I'm very pleased. It's our first title. It certainly cost enough. And you know, you and I are about whether you've done the right thing there, starting off with such expense. We won't be doing that for all titles going forward. Not just cost wise, but some of them don't warrant it. You know, they don't have that history or pedigree, and therefore you'd just be making physical content for the sake of it, I feel. But yeah, there's certainly, there are some titles that we've got in mind that, you know, the deluxe edition may well suit. But it's very, very much still a learning curve for us, you know.
And we have discussed that, you know, we should not let this packaging sort of dictate every release that we do. The films have got to come first, and you know, the status of a film or the type of film that we have, that the release should be naturally come out of that, really.
Yeah,
it's there are some labels that you know they produce wonderful sets, and you are inspired as a collector. But we, yeah, as Tom said, we don't want to be in a position where packaging determines the title. To us, that's the wrong way around.
Yes, you often hear David Gregory at Severin complaining about how it's become about cardboard instead of about the movies.
Absolutely that, yeah. And, you know, and as a result of that as well, we want to try and prove to be quite diverse in what we release as well, so we don't want to be pigeonholed as a label to release a certain type. I mean, you know, there's so many different types of cult, but I think we've got quite a varied bunch coming up, haven't we, to prove that, really.
I think so. I don't suppose you can give us any clues.
Well, we can tell you, obviously, our next title is Satan's Little Helper, the Jeff Lieberman film. Great film.
Worlds apart from The Last Hunter as well,
another one we're happy with. That's the master's finished on that now, so we're just waiting for... We ummed and ahed about packaging. Could we do this big book, etc., etc.? But we just thought, well, it would be overkill on this one. But then we've got other titles. We've got Satan's Blood coming up. Now we've used the master that Vinegar Syndrome did, the 4K restored. It's had a Blu-ray release over here before, but not with that master. And we're going to put together some cracking extras. We've already got a fantastic audio commentary from Jonathan Rigby and Kevin Lyons.
Kevin Lyons, yeah.
I tell you what, memory's terrible at my age. But and Tom's going to be doing some excellent... do you want to share that, Tom, or not?
Yeah, we're working on a piece on Spanish horror as well for the release. As you can imagine, that could potentially spiral into a feature-length project. So we're currently gathering our resources to do that, because, you know, we just want to be able to offer as much as we can about the film's origins and where it came from, and, you know, the landscape of film that surrounded it as well. And I think Spanish horror, especially Mexican horror as well, that it's so popular at the moment. And Satan's Blood, as great a film as it is, it tends to fall under the radar quite a bit. So I think it'll be well represented with a really big study on Spanish horror with it. So we're working on that, which is making me sweat thinking about it at the moment. Because, You know, when Graham initially got me doing some editing for him, you know, for some video essays for Satan's Little Helper, and I'm finding that the jobs I'm getting now on each release after that are kind of growing in ambition, and so it's quite exciting, but obviously we want to do the best job we can do, really.
And we're working on Mausoleum at the moment. That's shaping up pretty well, actually. Hasn't had a Blu-ray release over here as yet. Again, same master from Vinegar Syndrome, but we've got, well, Tom's just about completed a feature on Marjo Gortner.
Yeah, we've got a lovely piece on Marjo, a video essay presented by a film historian from Melbourne called John Harrison. He wrote a book on Marjo called Wildcat, and he's a lovely guy, and he's done a great job for us.
And he's a sport.
And he's a good sport. He's a really good sport. Yes, and we're currently editing another piece on Bobby Brezzi.
We tried and tried and tried to track down Bobby Brezzi for such a long time, and we just thought we almost gave up, but we managed to... we picked up an audio commentary from the old... Was it Eclipse DVD? It was BCI Eclipse?
Yeah, I think it was BCI Eclipse when they used to release double features as a kind of exploitation with the marquee and the posters in the marquee. There were some Grindhouse ones a bit like it.
Mm.
And it was paired with... What was it paired with?
Past Blood Song?
Blood Song. It was paired with Blood Song. But it was this Region 1 DVD, and it had a commentary track with Bobby Brezzi on it, which hasn't reared its head since. So we've been... So we got to search for that, really. We got searching for it, and we eventually got a copy sourced to us, but then it was a case of who owned this commentary.
Yeah. So, fortunately, our good friend Nathaniel Thompson had it. We listened to it, we liked it, and we made a deal with Walt Olson, so we bought that. So that will be included on the disc. But she did the commentary with a gent by the name of Lee Christian. And I just Facebook searched him and I said, excuse this random inquiry, but are you the chap who did the audio commentary? And he said, yes, I am. And he actually went and knocked on Bobby Brezzi's door and said, would you be interested?
Just on the off chance.
On the off chance, doing an interview. And she very kindly did. And we're really happy with this. She wouldn't do a video interview, unfortunately, because she's very concerned about her looks, although I'm told she looks great. She's 80 years old. But she, nonetheless, she did come out of retirement for us and did an audio interview, which Tom is currently editing on. We've got a load of scans and stuff, haven't we?
It's just a very candid reflection on her showbiz life, really, because she's been out of the game for so long. And, she's just... It's just quite sweet trying to listen and reminisce about things and whatnot. And she's such a good sport as well.
Yes.
She doesn't sound 80 for a start, does she?
No. And she tells this herself. It's not something we're disclosing here. I mean, she says, I'm 80. And I've been out of the business for so long. So, that was very gracious for her to do something like that for us.
So, I just can imagine we're sat here in Cradley Eve and names like this are coming, into the office and it's so strange. It's so strange.
Mixing with these
and it guys. Wasn't long after we managed to get that interview that Graham had a letter from Bobby.
I did, yeah.
With, the double B stamp on the front as well, the Beverly Hills address underneath it. It's quite surreal, really.
Yes.
That's it. That's the world that you're in now. You're rubbing shoulders with the.
It's been an eye opener. The old treasure hunt side of it is trying to locate people or locate the owners or something, or just trying to search for assets that would be great for the release. That's been quite eye opening in itself, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you've managed to amass some good contacts over in the States to help us with filming things and locating people as well, because they tend to be, if they're in LA, they tend to be in quite a close radius of one another. So
yeah, that's great. So just going back to The Last Hunter, I wonder if you could just talk us through in a bit more detail the sort of process of, like you said, you found this film on a list. So I'm interested, first of all, like, where did you get that list from? Like, how does one go about finding film rights and saying, okay, I'll have that one? And obviously you don't have to tell us how much it cost, but I'm interested in the sort of idea of location and then who's got the negative and, you know, how long and how kind of how in depth that process must be.
There are several Italian rights holders, and I asked Eugenio, because Eugenio is a font of all knowledge, and he will tell you who might own this and might own that. Yeah, so he sort of reached out via him, and you tend to come up with a list from a particular company of what's currently available. And that's quite interesting because you can see, you know, if you're after things that have gone, you can see, you have a good idea who might be releasing those. No spoilers, but it is
quite eye-opening to see, you know, that a lot of the labels that we love sort of dip into the same well, and labels that you probably wouldn't put together either, you know. So, you can imagine one label releasing something a bit more highbrow, and then a label releasing something a bit more B-movie and cult, and then you'll find that they've still come from the same list of avails, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a few sales agents that have their catalogues that you can go to. I mean, but then there's also times when you source the rights from the filmmaker themselves. So there's several different ways you can go about it, really. Mm-hmm. But with Last Hunter, you were pointed in the direction of the Italian rights owners directly, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they've got the OCN, and you do a deal for the license, for example, for 5 years. And then you have the option to take a current scan or to have a complete restoration done, which is what we paid. It wasn't cheap, but it's worth the money.
And where was the restoration done? Was that in Rome or was that at Bologna? Or
It was in-house. It was in-house. I don't actually have the exact details.
Is it? I know they do it at Cinecittà. I think they've got some restoration labs there.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
If it was Cinecittà, then, you know, that's amazing, because I'd love to visit.
Oh, you can. Cinecittà is, you can go and have tours.
It's like a museum now, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a tour there a few years ago. It was awesome.
I've seen that, you know, the big head from Fellini's Casanova's there, and the big head that gets submerged and whatnot.
Yeah, and they've got all the sets of Rome and everything. It's really cool.
Wow, I'd love to go.
Oh, really, we need to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
it's a bit different with the Italian side. They tend to ask for a flat fee with no royalties, which is fine, but you've obviously got to stump up and hope that you make enough sales to make cover your overheads and then make money. But then what we find is a lot of the American right holders, you'll pay much less of a minimum guarantee, but then they'll have a percentage of royalties. It's horses for courses. We've just started, and everything is experience and learning, and we have a sort of a whiteboard on the wall, and things change on it. We can change our mind from week to week as experience teaches us things, sometimes good, sometimes not so good.
And then you're juggling film treasures on top of that, so sometimes your day's split in half, or it's a bit of this and then a bit of that, then a bit of this, sometimes at the same time. And then you just got to, like you said, it's just about trying to keep every project on track, really. So it's like, how's this getting on for this film? Do a bit of that today. And then next week, it's like, well, how's this getting on? What, we need to focus on this week? So hopefully that, you know, by the time these are all ready to come out, there's not too much of a bigger gap in between releases. So it's very much a learning curve every day. It's it's a new horizon really for us.
That's really cool. I've said this on the podcast before, but my PhD was in film distribution history, so this is the side of things that really sort of fascinates me. So I could talk about it all day, but I'm aware that it might be getting a bit too technical for the people who are listening. But this The Last Hunter, it's a limited edition, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. There's 2,000 units made. Again, commercial decision really. It's, I was told that titles of that, well, not titles, but products of that sort with the, you know, the bells and whistle packaging, typically get produced around 3,000 units. But we said to look, the distributors, we can't afford at this stage early in the game to, you know, overproduce and have them not sell, because, you know, we're depending on cash flow to go on to the next title. So, you know, we're not established by any means. So we're sort of split between retail and selling direct. Obviously, selling direct gets us more money, and at the moment we're sort of making a point of saying, well, look, if you buy from us directly, every penny in profit will go into subsequent releases.
And they get a poster.
And they get a poster.
Which is very nice.
Yeah, I thank you. It's turned out nice. It's got Graham Humphrey's usual fantastic art on it, along with the original one?
The British Quad, wasn't it?
The British Quad, yeah. But again, it's, you know, you learn. We asked for some feedback on the Facebook group, and we got such a random response in terms of, you know, would you like a rigid slip box and pay a bit more, or would you like a soft, or would you not bother about slips at all? And to be honest, I wish I hadn't done it, because the responses were that varied. It didn't really help us make a decision one way or the other. You know, you went from the whole, oh, you must keep it like this because they look classy and, you know, you'll be like second sight kind of thing, I wish. But, you know, to the whole, oh, I couldn't give a monkeys about slips, make them cheap. So, you know, it's difficult to know what to get right. And so we've kind of concluded that it's going to depend on individual titles. You know, if we can produce a booklet that's reasonable and worth doing, and not just creating one for the sake of it, you know, then we'll do that.
And we've got to do that whilst navigating building a brand as well. So it's all about creating a presence where people can just entrust in the label, because that's what collectors do. They trust their labels, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, you know, don't get me wrong, a lot of the people that buy their stuff know their stuff, but then there's ones that just like to go in blind and buy whatever comes out on that label. So we've got to just navigate our way into building a brand now to be able to just release what we feel's right for the, you know, for us and the market, because we want to be passionate about every release, but we want to be able to make sure that people can rely on it really and look out for it. So that's going to be the challenge really now.
I think that's a really interesting point, that the sort of the boutique label now, because, you know, it's quite rare that films, the big, really well-known films, haven't already been released. So like you said, a lot of the labels are putting films out that most normal people have never heard of. But it's because you like that brand and you trust their kind of... It's about curation, I suppose. So you trust the curation of that brand. So you think, well, I liked that other one, so I'm bound to like this one, and you just sort of go...
Well, because we're in such an early stage as well, we've got to balance that with something that we know would be a seller as well. So it's like, you get some of these labels now, like what Indicator did with the Michael J. Murphy box set. They were in a position where they could take such a bold chance with that. And, you know, that is a sign of where we're moving in this country now, where, you know, 101's releasing the AGFA collection and stuff like this, which means the floodgates have opened wider now for really esoteric stuff to kind of get out in deluxe editions. But I don't think we're in a position to be able to take such bold leaps just yet. We want to be able to make sure what we release has got a fan base and has, would be of interest. But, you know, I think we've got a good run lined up, and we're really confident in them. So hopefully that can push us towards a point where we can maybe take more chances.
Yeah. I was in Cambridge a couple of weeks ago, and I popped into FOP, And there was a whole bunch of Last Hunter boxes right by the door. So I was quite impressed to see that it's see it out there in the world as well as online.
We actually did that. We went to HMV last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we went to Merry Hill.
And just to make sure they've got them in so I can get my photo, took with one in my hand as well. And yeah, it's... but no, I mean, you know, it's like you say, curation's important. Taking your time is important. We'll never get to that. And we don't want to get to the point where we're releasing copious titles without, you know, really checking and double-checking, because QC is important as well. I mean, we've all learned that, haven't we, as collectors?
Oh, yeah. Which seems to falter a lot these days, you know. I mean, sometimes you're looking out at a product, you know, no names, not naming any names or anything, but you just think, wow, the QC does tend to drop off. I suppose this might be a result of when a company ends up having to put more product out than it can keep up with, I don't know. But we don't want to be able to fall into that trap, really.
Well, especially if you're getting into the whole replacement disc thing.
Oof. Oh, yes. It is absolutely terrible.
It must be.
But one of my bugbears, because I watch a lot of particularly Italian stuff, subtitles are like riddled with mistakes, and I don't understand how that gets through. I mean, that seems like be quite an easy thing to QC, but it's often full of errors. So
yes,
I mean, it's not the most exciting part of the release, is it? Well, but people do have to sit through this to make sure that it's fine, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's combing it over with a fine comb, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Speaking of subtitles, do you have any more Italian titles on your long list? You don't have to tell me what they are necessarily, but are you planning to go back to Italy for more?
Well, we are, but we haven't got anything booked. The reason is we found out even this early on that plans can change very rapidly. You know, I sort of thought, well, we've got this in the bag now. What second, thirds? So we've got some regular output. But then what we found is that opportunities will come along and you think, oh, it's quite a lot of that, and that'll do.
Takes you on a different course then.
Yeah, and we have, speaking of which, I won't name it, but we're very excited because we have signed one title, for not Italian, but from the 80s, another Section 3 film, which have been after for ages.
It is sometimes lumped with Italian, but it's not quite.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Whitten.
Answers on a postcard.
Yeah, but, it reminds me of the Bangles song, Walk Like an Egyptian. But that's enough of that. Foreign types with a hooker.
I thought I'd messed up then, right?
Yeah. But yeah, we've been told a new master's coming and we've got the UK rights for it, so we're very happy to pick that one up. But yeah, again, that was opportunity. It wasn't... I had been searching for it for a couple of years, but the source it came from was very unexpected. But, you know, we've got, 7, 8 titles sort of signed up, and
it's amazing really how they've mounted up like that, isn't it? Because
yeah,
I think you were talking about 3, 4 maybe when I met you.
Yeah.
So,
and they're very varied. You know, we're not going to do stick. We must do Italian this. We must do American that. We're not going to. If we like the film and it hasn't had a release, or we think we can put out a decent release, then we'll release it. And it doesn't have to be horror action. It could be comedy. You know.
We don't want to pigeonhole, really. You might talk to us in a year or two's time if we're still around, and we might have chosen a different course. You know, we might have chosen a different pattern, really. But for now, it's a case of we don't want to discriminate because we love films, and we want to put out all different kinds.
You know, there are so many that are still unreleased. I did a bit of a poll. Not well, it wasn't a poll. I sort of put the question out there on Facebook and Twitter a couple of weeks ago, like if you were going to have your own label and you were going to avoid horror, just because, you know, that's pretty well served already. Like what other kinds of films would you want to put out? And lots of people talked about Peplum films, for example, or Eurospy films, or even, you know, sticking with Italian, there's a lot of those kind of sexy comedies with Edward Fenech and Barbara Boucher and people like that. There's a lot of that stuff that, or even comedies like Toto or, you know, Lucio Fulci did a load of musicals and comedies before he got into the giallo. Like, there's still a lot, but the trouble, of course, is that you've got to balance that with, is it worth spending all the money? Because is anyone going to want to buy it?
And, you know, this is the well that will eventually be dipped from and dried out in itself, you know. And yeah, it's a case of, do we reach a point where we're able to facilitate that? Because over here, we've obviously got the dreaded BBFC to contend with as well.
Yes,
which, you know, adds so much more expense to a release.
It's a rip-off. Honestly, it's...
Yeah, could you tell us about that? Not everybody... I know I have a lot of listeners in America, so can you tell us what that involves?
Well, the British Board of Film Classification is, I suppose, like the MPAA, but over here, if it's on physical release or exhibited at the cinema, it has to be rated by the BBFC. There's just no two ways about it. Mm. And that means you have to rate every last little bit of on-screen material, including a movable menu, I think, and trailers, extra features. So you can imagine that is an expense that mounts up ridiculously.
Yeah. I mean, The Last Hunter, The Last Hunter or Sage Little Helper, you know, you're talking a grand just for the feature film alone. And it's such a lot of money, and you think, come on, you know, you're not helping me, you're not helping yourself, surely.
And is that because it hasn't been rated by the BBFC before? Like, if something has, can you not just use the rating it got last time, or do you have to resubmit
it? You can, as long as it's the exact same content.
Right.
You can apply for something, I forget what it's called now, but... yeah, the guy at BBFC told me you can do that, but I don't know what the cost is, but there'll no doubt be a fee for that too.
I think even if a film run at a different speed, they might see that as a different...
They do. Yeah. If it's just 1 second different, it's classified as a different film.
Yeah, and obviously The Last Hunter was cut to shreds previously, so your version is much longer.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't mind if it was a couple hundred quid, but I mean, a grand is just, you know, for what they do, you think, come on, it's too much.
It is a challenge for anyone trying to make a go at it in this country for distribution, you know. And it's an outdated model in my eyes, really, you know. It's by all means, if you have to do it for the cinema, do it for the cinema. But for physical media now, I think everyone's a bit more clued up, aren't they, you know.
Yeah.
And people will stream anything without being stopped or told they can't watch something, you know. It's down to parents if they want to, you know, moderate a child's viewing. But, it is quite crippling. It's terrible.
Yeah, and of course, legally, that you don't have to do it for the cinema. Like, that's basically voluntary. And but it's the law that the whole Video Nasties thing resulted in that law. That's the one that means you have to do it for anything that's released at home or streaming, I think. But
you can see why so many people got fed up and went to the States and started their company.
And obviously this reflects the state of the market now as well. You know, it's all part of that and how you have to repurpose physical media to make it collectible. And, you know, you're seeing films that you would have cast aside when you were collecting DVD or video, and they're giving, like, steelbook releases and stuff like this. Mm. You know, we are living in another golden age, I'd say, you know. We are, you know, because all these films that you never thought you'd see would see the light of day again are cleaned up in 2K, 4K and whatnot. It's a collector's dream, isn't it? Yeah. But it's obviously because it's had to be reinterpreted so to survive, you know. Mm. And... piling those assets on an extras and then the BBFC, it's a big risk, you know. So
yes, exactly.
So don't do it is what you're saying to everybody listening who might want to start their own company.
You need some capital behind it, and it is a risk. And you don't make, you know, a lot of money, believe me, you don't. You know, the costs, when you look at production and that's on top of your license and extras and everything else, it's a lot of money.
And that license, you know, starts ticking away as soon as you've, you know, so yeah, you've really got to act fast on getting all the assets out there, and then into shops, and it's a race against time.
Yeah.
So you know, I wouldn't say don't do it, but you know, it's well, I guess like any business, it's a risk. But we've been lucky; we've had some good support. You know, and I mentioned several people in the thanks list and the booklet of last winter.
And it's getting very good reviews as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's in terms of that, I'm fairly proud for a first release. You know, it's there are things that I'd probably change now. But you know,
a bit late for that.
it is a bit late for that. But yeah, I mean, it's and if you're weird like me, you know, not only looks good, but it feels and smells good. That's the thing, you know.
Yes.
And I once had a nice gentleman ask me in HMV whether anybody was here to look after me when I started smelling the booklets. I don't know what he meant by that, I'm sure. But, no, I have got this thing.
That gentleman was me.
That was Tom, by the way. I have got this. I love the smell of booklets and packaging.
We can all relate to that.
Thank you. I thought it was just me. It was weird. But it's good stuff. But if you're gonna go for it, you need a bit of a helping hand, and you need to have pick a title I feel that you know you think will reasonably sell well ish, if only just to start and make your money back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's such a lot of, you know, hurdles to get over, certainly.
But we've had a lot of support from other labels who have been very kind to us and helpful.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, so, which is really nice to know, really, because, you know, you think, oh, we're entering this new domain now, and how cutthroat is it going to be? So it's really nice when, you know, someone's actually helping you.
Yeah, and I suppose that you're not really competing so much because you're all doing slightly different, offering slightly different things, so...
Yeah, and we've discussed this, haven't we, Tom, about, you know, that in terms of personal pride, personal satisfaction, you might be a bit miffed that another label's put out a title that you were interested in. But as long as they do a good job, then fine, you know. We are film fans, we're film collectors.
Collectors are going to collect, you know.
And, you know, that will always be our sort of our measuring stick and our outlook for what we release. So, you know, if somebody comes along and does a fantastic release, then fine.
So what else have you got in the pipeline? Are you going to be, like, heading to the Cannes Festival and the other kind of film markets and doing that glamorous lifestyle?
I've got them in the autographs to sign and post out.
We're taking Film Treasure to HorrorCon next month. So obviously we'll have a presence for Treasure Films there as well. Yeah. So, but brand building really and spreading awareness.
Yeah. But wherever the road or the plane leads us, we'll start going to these festivals, I think. It's, you know, as I say, it's early days and we're still very much learning.
Great. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. Thank you to both of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules. Tom, I better let you get back to shifting some pallets.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be with you today, Adrian.
Nice to see you in Cyberland. Hopefully we'll meet up again in the flesh.
We're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.